Anyway, I was going to talk from about how we can use our karma, you know, the circumstances that we're in, kind of can lead us to either liberation or lead us to more suffering. And it's really how we use the difficulties and problems that we face. And a lot of training is learning how to kind of deal with the fact that we, like the whole world, have these very logical habits to want to avoid difficulty, avoid suffering, be comfortable, find things pleasurable. And think of it, that's why often people don't do what you all just did for an hour, which is sit still looking at a wall. Because if you think of it, it's not always, if you always found that the most pleasurable thing to do, you'd be very unusual. And after a while, I'd say you almost don't got it right if it's always, you know, pleasurable to sit still. And not that it should always be unpleasant, but it's not always pleasant, and it can be hard. And a lot of aspects of training can be hard. And we learn from our defilements. Our defilements, our desires, our passions, our greed, our delusion, are the things that are preventing us from seeing the truth, you know, because we get caught up in them. And usually the way we look at life, where we seek pleasure and avoid pain, has an aspect of delusion attached to it, and the fact that we're making much more of a problem out of it than it should be, and we're getting caught up in it, and then spinning a delusion how, like, logically I can think, I shouldn't be uncomfortable. Something's wrong if I'm uncomfortable. And when we hit a situation where that's difficult, hard, it's not like we have to seek them out in training, because life will keep presenting ourselves with things that irritate us, bother us, find hard, that provoke fear, discomfort, all those different elements. Can we use those actually to help us find the truth? And a lot of training comes from how we use what arises in our life. Because we can either use it as things that are getting in our way, or we can use them as things that will actually point us to the truth. And it's like when you take the precepts, there's a number of ceremonies at the Jukai retreat. One of them, and the last one goes, you know, the recognition ceremony, in which you ascend the altar and the monks process around saying, Buddha bows to Buddha, and Buddha recognizes Buddha. And can you recognize the Buddha in the karma that's coming up in your life? Can you bow to what it is? Or do you make a problem out of it and by saying, wow, something is wrong here, something is to be avoided? And training in a way will go as deep as our commitment to use our karma will take us. People often will kind of look at, like, you know, being a monk is a way of training. The real advantage of being a monk is the commitment. That it means is that you're stuck in a situation in which you kind of often can't escape from dealing with something. You know, just like I was talking to, you know, Reverend Vivian, who's going to be the new chief cook at the Abbey, and she'd never done much cooking, and it's like, and I'm pretty sure without asking her, she probably had no great desire to be the cook. And it's actually a rough job, because if nothing else, people, you're determining what everybody eats. Very few of us are completely detached from what we're eating. And you can even see the way we can get caught up. It's like, I'm stuck with whatever she chooses to feed us. And, you know, and realizing it means, due to karma, a lot to people what it is. And the interesting thing is that, you know, as a monk, it's on like it's asked, wow, is this what you want to do? Usually, you know, it's what's needed, and you do the job. The trick in life is often we're can try as much as possible, which is a very practical thing, orient our life to being as comfortable, pleasurable, easy as we can. And that on a level is a very normal, reasonable thing to do. However, the commitment to train is a commitment to really look at what is your responsibilities, what is good in each situation, what will lead to good. And then use it as a vehicle of training, which is, you know, rather than all these things being problems, getting in my way, whether it's my body, my family, my work, my health, my the politics, you know, presidential elections not going the way you want them to, which I've experienced in my life, plenty of examples of. Can we use it to actually free us and to see, give us a mirror to look deeper at what's going on? When we find something unpleasant, how do we not take it personally, but how can we just see what is the teaching here? What's really going on when I'm finding something hard? Instead of the normal thing which we look at it is our defilement, is the way we spin the delusion of blaming something. You know, finding a reason why. Wow, people shouldn't be this way. How do we use it to really look at what's going on and get a Dharma teaching from what's going on? And how can we try to see the Dharma in whatever it is that we're doing? You know, kind of use that as a mirror instead of always kind of hearing our own thoughts and kind of recognizing, if you want to see delusion, all you have to do is see, what are you telling yourself? It's unlikely, unless you're doing way, way better than I suspect any of you are, your thoughts actually give you a pretty good readout on delusion. Because it's not like you're not always having Buddha bows to Buddha. You know, and Buddha recognizes Buddha. You know, you're not seeing the sacred and the wholeness in every situation. Your mind's finding things irritating, finding things, even kind of getting caught up. Wow, that's great. Or I can look at the cookies. The chocolate chip cookies ran out before they got to me. Type of karma. What was me? I only had a Fig Newton. Whatever it is. But can you actually learn from what it is that you're encountering? And the commitment to kind of use and take seriously these responsibilities of life, rather than being obstacles, are ways, if you're finding them hard, difficult, okay, where is this hardness coming from? Where is the difficulty coming from? And look very carefully at what are we doing? How are we relating to it? And another way we don't apply the Dharma, it's like there's a saying I always like in Buddhism, which is, wherever you look, you should see the three Dharma gates. The three Dharma gates are to see that things are unsatisfactory, that dukkha exists, you know, which actually you get caught up in. You know, it's like, just think of being young and in love. You know, you have the illusion, wow, we're going to be like that Hollywood movie. You know, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, you know, are going to obviously get along. And of course, that's, you know, how all those movies end, you know. And we have that illusion that if we just get this, have this, possess this, we'll be happy. We don't see the unsatisfactory nature and the trend. And because we're not actually seeing the other Dharma gate, impermanence. You know, can we see that? There's nothing solid there. You know, you eat a good meal and it's gone. You're comfortable. Okay, you get discomfort. That if you're comfortable, if you stay in that position long enough, you'll be uncomfortable. It's one of the principles even in meditation. You learn, no matter how comfortable a position you're in, sit still in it, and you'll get uncomfortable. You know, it's the nature of the body. It has to keep moving. It's actually, in a way, restless. Even sleeping, you're restless. You have to keep moving. You know, stay comfortable. And there's something very tiring about the fact that we're always restless. You know, that's unsatisfactory, to be restless. Can we see the non-substantial nature of whatever it is that we're facing? Or do we make it these hard, solid things? Just think of how solid we can just make a harsh word from somebody. Nothing's much more ephemeral than a word. Yet we can actually solidify it in our heart and walk around with it for weeks, years. Actually, I think we can carry them around for lifetimes, you know, without even knowing what it is that we're carrying. Just that feeling. And then seeing no self, which is the hardest one, because, of course, how can there be no self? This, I'm all full of me. You know, I'm real. All you have to do is, you know, is kind of, if I'm not real, why am I so vulnerable? Why is it fear and all the rest? But to take the Dharma of trying to see, how can I not take, if everything is Buddha, how can I not take everything as personal? You know, and that's part of what we're trying to see. How do I take my pain and not make it personal, just see it as pain, almost as a Dharma lesson, as just something happening? How do I take all the words, praise and blame, and not take it personally? Just say, wow, that makes me feel good. That's a Dharma lesson. I get caught up in that. God, that makes me feel bad. You know, cookie make me feel good. You know, keep eating it makes me feel bad. If I eat too much. And this is all a teaching for us. And it's the commitment to use what we're experiencing as a teaching rather than as just something to get through or something to avoid or something. You know, I mean, I try to avoid my body being in pain on a practical level, but on a spiritual level, I have to kind of accept when the pain's there, there's pain. When there's comfort there, there's comfort. And realize neither of them is, you know, it's just kind of, why am I so attracted to one and pushing away the other so hard? What's the big deal about being uncomfortable? What's a big deal even about being in pain? I think it's a big deal, but I've actually met people who are practicing training, and they're actually in a lot, you know, they have conditions that just have them in pain all the time. And there's a teaching of, how do I train and not get caught up? And, you know, and that becomes a great teaching, which actually I've often been grateful for, even though they would still stop the pain if they could. On one level, they'll, you know, both want to stop the pain, the same way as I want to be comfortable, but I can sit still and use it as a teaching. And that it's okay to be uncomfortable. And all our responsibilities in our life, you know, the responsibility to our bodies, our families, our work, the world, whatever our karmic conditions are, whatever the situations we find ourselves in, can we use them as a teaching? And can we understand wisdom comes from seeing the world and ourselves clearly without clinging to one condition and pushing away another? And that's, you know, see what you have a strong aversion to. You know, just pick out, what do you really dislike? Try to sit still with that. See what really causes you to fear. See what you really want. and realize how much suffering and fear there's going to be if you don't get what you want. And it's all becomes kind of a Dharma lesson. And whatever's happening points us to the Dharma, just like the Four Noble Truths. Can you see whatever you're doing, whenever it's, you know, suffering exists, again, the Dharma gates, you know, impermanence, suffering, and no self. Can you see the world with those eyes? And if you don't, okay, well, that's not... We realize we have habits, and training is seeing almost how we have all these habits of solidifying wrong ways of looking at things. Just like a habit of being annoyed, a habit of being greedy, a habit of being, you know, deluded ways of looking at things, deluded ways of looking at yourself. I guarantee you, if any of you look at yourself, I'd be very surprised if what you're seeing is the Buddha. So that means there's something not quite right there. You know, so what are you seeing when you look at yourself? What do you see when you make a mistake? That's good karma. That's quite a teaching I find when I make a mistake. Because all that habit of self comes up very strongly in all of us when we, you know, just like if I get something right, there's a habit too. Like, you know, except I kind of like that habit. So I can see myself clinging to the part that makes me feel good. Oh, Kinray is wonderful. That makes me feel good. Kinray's an idiot. Doesn't make me feel so good. So what's going on when you're doing that? And can you see, okay, instead of making a problem out of this, how do I learn? How can I use this as a vehicle? You know, how can I use this as a teaching? You know, just like at times I would think, well, I can't. Something is just too hard to change or too hard to deal with or all the rest. And, of course, if you tell yourself that, that's... You know, what it is. You know, if I believe in the solidity of my, you know, it's kind of like making something solid out of the fact that you just had a habit of doing it, habit of looking, a habit of making mistakes, a habit of clinging, a habit of fearing, habit of desiring. Okay, how do you change? You know, what's going on there? What are you having trouble with? How can I learn? What do I, you know, what's this teaching me? And also, how is this not the, you know, the Dharma? Really trying to take the teaching into our hearts. You know, the third noble truth. Second noble truth is to see, oh yeah, I'm suffering because I'm still holding on to things. Okay, third noble truth. Nirvana exists. There is a cessation of suffering. This is real. This is what our heart wants. You know, fourth noble truth, the Eightfold Path, you know, right, the steps, starting with right view. How do I view all this, my life? How do I view others? How do I view the world in a way that'll point me to liberation, or it'll just point me to be thinking, oh, all these people are, you know, nothing's the way I want it to be. You know, I don't like this world, this life, this person. And really trying to trust that it's enough to... And we find the wholeness and the wisdom where we are now by bringing the completeness to the moment that we're in, rather than wondering, well, I have these habits, so it's going to be... I'm not going to stay there very long. It's like meditating. You know, how can you... You have all these bad habits when you meditate. In fact, if you look at what goes on in your meditation, you're seeing a lot of bad habits, patterns your mind goes to, ways you try to entertain yourself, ways you try not to be there, ways that you don't have faith in what's going on. And you can say, well, this doesn't work. The people will commonly say that. They'll say, wow, I can't change this mind. You know, yet all you have to do in the meditation is come back to being there. That's all. And just trust that that's enough. And keep coming back. There's a wholeness. Peace is there if you just let go of this stuff. You know, and you can say, well, I can't let go of this stuff. That's believing in the reality. Making the habit into something solid rather than just, God, my mind goes into, tangents. You know, it bounces around. And it's not surprising. It's been bouncing around for a long, long time. And, I spent a lifetime letting it bounce. So, it's not surprising. How do I expect to sit down and not have it do? And it takes work and it can change. Just like my heart has a habit of grasping. And I can make that very real and solid, or I could just trust that. It's just my way of my way of being, and it comes out of looking at things the wrong way. Just like I can look a lot at the world, and just in terms of how I can make my day and life happier. It seems a perfectly reasonable thing to do. Hell, it's in the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay, stop pursuing happiness. Be un-American. And a lot of Buddhism is fairly un-American. Don't leave here and just think, I'll make myself happy. I'll find something to buy. shopping is entertainment. Try to realize our real need is found. In the practice of just realizing we can be freed of being pulled in all these directions. And that's really what our heart longs for. It wants to see everything as Buddha. Even the things that are messed up are Buddha. Just like a child who's throwing a temper tantrum isn't any less Buddha because they're, screaming bloody hell. And you're feeling like, God, what did I get into? Somebody was telling me, who's became as common in modern life, became a mother at a fairly not young age. Somehow waking up constantly during the night when you're 45 is quite different than if I did this when I was 25. my willingness isn't the same level, but you still get the child, you still have that commitment, you have to wake up and do it. And there's great freedom in realizing you don't have a choice, that this is what's right to do. I have to take care of that kid, and we have to take care of, and there's actually significance that embraces everything. If we take care of our spiritual life and use it to awaken, because it'll help us and help whoever comes across us, rather than thinking, oh, how do I just deal with my karma? Realize it's just karma. Greed is greed. It's everywhere. Delusion is delusion. It's everywhere. Ill will, frustration, anger, fear is everywhere. And the solution isn't just removing the things that scare us. Just like I can even look, we were mentioning before, the greenhouse effect. It's amazing the panic I can sometimes get, almost like, this is going to end the world. There's nothing about it ending the world, it's just going to make a mess. This could even happen naturally. All you need is a couple of volcanoes. Really, seriously. A few volcanoes below, it'll have the exact same effect as the greenhouse effect. All of humans making a mess for, burning fossil fuel for 1,000 years. The same thing could happen from one really, really major volcanic eruption.
Krakatoa did that the last century.
Yeah, and really, and there's been bigger ones historically that if they blow, the whole world's climate will be changed for a while. In fact, I was reading...
It's like 5 years, I think.
In fact, there was a... What was it? When the continents split apart... I like science trivia. all the continents used to be together. Mm-hmm. When some of them split apart, it allowed so much magma to, eruptions to come up that they can still trace that. It's like over 1,000 miles of lava flows. It killed almost all life on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those ends of an era. Mm-hmm. Because it basically knocked out, a lot of life. And that's just a natural thing that could happen, just on some level or other. Periodically it's going to happen, things like that. Going on. And life still, a few things always hang in there. Just like when the dinosaurs went around, there were little tiny mammals around. Mammals are as old as dinosaurs. They just didn't do well. They were just little things running around, but dinosaurs went away and the little mammals stayed around. So, probably some life will come. Anyway, anybody have any comments as I'm talking onward? Anything about people's lives they can use as training? Somebody should have something on this thing. Yeah.
I noticed recently I've been involved in about 3 separate situations trying to help people where the conflict just got too great. And I finally looked at it and I thought, well, maybe I need to think about myself, have compassion for self. And I ended up pulling out of one of them terribly and pulling back on others. And so that, for me, was a real lesson. I thought I was doing good, but...
It's a lot of situations like that is accepting... Which is hard to do, is accepting sometimes that there's a limit. Just like sometimes when I look at the political thing, it's like people have all these genuine needs in our society. But also, if you look at it, there's a limit to what, we can do. It's not like everything can be addressed, everything can be helped, there just isn't the resources actually to help everything that has a genuine need just in society. It would be like we would need, and it's hard to accept those limits, and it's hard to kind of see somebody suffer and realize that maybe we can't help them or it's not good for us to help them, and it's hard to see those lines. But to try to be at peace with what's going on and try to see how we're getting caught up in the situation is a teaching for us. And it's usually if I have to help somebody, I often see myself getting a little caught up in it, and I have to kind of see, okay, and just see what I'm doing. See how my heart's getting demanding something, requiring something, and see how can I, bow to the situation and just do it and then try to let go. Do what I can, and then realize it's a lot of it is out of my control. In fact, most things are out of my control, which is actually very tough.
That's very weird.
Well, it's good that it's out of my control. If you think about it, it'd be kind of rough if everything was under my control. You'll all be here every Sunday. You have no free will anymore. You will train. And just kind of using our job, all these different circumstances, our commute, our the body's problems, all these as Dharma teachings rather than as problems. Using our discomfort as a teaching that points out, this is suffering, this is dukkha. Seeing that it's impermanent. So there's nothing solid there. It's like I'm comfortable, I'm uncomfortable, I'm happy, I'm sad. All these things keep going. This.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's so hard to look up. You know, how advised to look up when we're in those horrible places, that horribly horrible feeling places. And it just seems really hard to look up at times. And it seems like there's no... It doesn't feel... I mean, the looking up, I think I understand, is pointing towards the Dharma. That's what it means. Is that right about...
It's a look up. It's a Dharma also to see... You know, you're looking up. The basis of the practice is really faith. And what you're dealing with when you're getting caught up in a situation, and in a way using that expression, looking down, is you're getting caught up in suffering generally, and the reality of it, the overwhelming nature of it, all the rest. To look up is to let go and have right view and to kind of see, you know, the non-substantial nature, the impermanence, and that this is all, in a way, Buddha, that there's not a problem here. And it's to keep seeing, trying to reorienting your thoughts towards the right thing. You know, it'd be like somebody does something. You can either complain about them mentally, or you can work at letting go and think and reminding yourself, it's actually nice, I like that person. That's a way of looking at a positive rather than a negative. And it's true. I mean, you know, people I like annoy me. You know, in fact, I annoy me. I get on my own nerves. And it's like, how do I, you know, how do you have compassion for this? How do you not make a problem out of it? And it helps just to say, you know, to find ways to look at it, you know, try to be grateful. Gratitude is a great grounding of right view. If Buddha bows to Buddha, you're grateful. Buddha in front of me, not this person who's getting on my nerves. Buddha. I'm a Buddha. Should stop complaining about me, even if I make a mistake. You know, it's still a Buddha making the mistake. How do I help this Buddha realize he's a Buddha? How do I not make a problem out of what's going on? And that's hard to do. We have to really look at see how do we relate to what's going on? See our delusion and keep poor. You know, it's like we can walk out here saying, well, this is all, most of me is deluded. You know, it's like all, I'm getting caught up, opinionated. You know, the readout of my mind is not a great readout type of, you know, if you had a good printout of it all, there's not that much Dharma coming out of it always. Okay, well, the training is to kind of keep orienting that to the Dharma, to letting go, you know, to seeing the Dharma in what you're doing, seeing the teaching, you know, just like, you know, I suffer, you know, remind myself, it's impermanent, it's okay. Somebody, you know, instead of somebody angry with me getting upset and being critical of them being angry, you look up by just having compassion. This being is suffering. Why do I have to make their suffering worse by criticizing their suffering? Or can I help there? Can I help me and them see what's the truth is, that it's Buddha bows to Buddha? So unless I bow to them, all they're going to see is angry person's going to see another angry person. And the whole world becomes angry. You look up, you know, by not, you know, and it's like the story, it was like a Reverend Master Ji was in, a young monk in Sojaji, and she was nursing somebody who was sick and dying, and she actually didn't get a chance to bathe for a while, and she finally got her first break in a while and had a chance to took a bath. But trouble it was, it was a bathhouse that all men used. None of the male monks could use the bathhouse because she was using it. They summoned the being very Japanese, some in the bath, the head of the bath, you know, the senior who's oversees the bath, to tell her. So she comes out of the bath, and he's furious with her, and he's just yelling at her, you know. And suddenly she realizes he's actually not even angry with her. He just realizes he has to make the point that you can't do this. And in the middle of his tirade, she suddenly picked up that he was just doing his job. He just had a, you know, what she did was really unacceptable, you know. I don't, you know, from his point of view, and actually from my point of view, can't do that. You know, you just looking back, you know, she shouldn't have done that. It was a mistake, what she did, a very clear mistake. You can't just decide you need it more than everyone else. But she suddenly, in the middle of it, she just bowed to him. He's yelling at her. She just smiled and bowed. He stops yelling at her. He just smiled and bowed because he realized she got the point, you know. You know, the very fact that she bowed like that meant she knew what he was saying. He didn't have to keep yelling at her to make the point. Buddha bowed to Buddha, and the whole thing was, rather than anger seeing anger, Buddha sees Buddha. Whatever the karma is in your life, we're trying to find what stops us from bowing to it. Saying, yes, okay, this is the life of Buddha. Why am I fighting it? What am I fine? What's the problem? And to have compassion for the fact that often we don't want to be where we are. We don't want to put up with this. You know, I always feel like I have this inner child having a temper tantrum, like, no, no. Not this, not this. You know, all I have to, if you want to know, it would have come up clearly in me, that inner temper tantrum if the election didn't go my way. I was thinking, no, no. And I just realized, you know, let go of it. You know, it's happened before. You know, it's just me getting caught up in what I want. Even if I think it's good, it's still not out of, you know, it's really not, you know, it's really, you know, big karmic things that we don't control, obviously. And I have to just still be at peace with, even if we have an awful government. You know, even if, amazingly enough, most Americans don't agree with me. As dumb as they all can be. I realize the absurdity of that, you know, that it's just... And situations keep arising that bring up karma, bad reactions on our part. You know, we keep getting Dharma lessons. You know, things keep being not the way we want them to be. And can we actually use, and instead of just pretending, one way of training is almost to pretend that, and people often say that, oh, this doesn't bother me. Rather than actually recognizing, no, this does bother you. And actually, you're not getting anywhere unless you really look at why it's bothering you and what are you asking to be different. Why are you getting disturbed by this rather than pretending, no, no, even it's good training that I'm disturbed. The good training is to see what is actually disturbing you. Let go, see what it is that, how did I get so bothered by this? Where is this irritation coming from? Even if I'm meditating, why am I, where's this agitation? You know, I'm all agitated. Where is it coming from? I'm bored. Somebody recently was telling me, what do you deal with boredom? I'm saying, if you don't like boredom, this isn't quite the practice for you. You know, it's like, because you have to learn. It's one of the first teachings of meditation is, you know, is you actually develop a relationship to how do you deal with the boredom of meditating. Notice how boring it is when you're trying not to meditate. Like, this isn't the most best way to enjoy yourself, to sit there and not fully be there. You know, it's like when you're sitting there and you don't want to be there, that's, you know, that's very boring. Well, when you keep putting, and think of it, when you put the energy into really sitting there, it's amazing how you're not bored anymore. you know, the boredom comes from trying not to be there. It's actually kind of interesting to see how, you know, it's a challenge to just sit there, just be still. Yeah.
Would you speak about that, to tear at the, on the seat? To just tear a lot of the time?
See it arise and pass and realize it's not you. You know, it's just a feeling. A lot of karma is cleansed by, it becomes a real problem the more we take it into our heart and make it personal. And it becomes more just like, wow, that's the part of us that sees the terror isn't terrified, and that points us to liberation. And we have to just be willing to accept it, see it. It's like seeing pain. You're not the pain. You can sit there and just be aware, wow, there's a sensation, but you're not the sensation. And you can sit there and be in quite a bit of discomfort. And in fact, in life, if you ever have chronic pain, you have to just learn, oh, there's pain there. It's just another sensation. I don't have to make it me. I don't have to identify with it. It's just pain. The same thing with terror, fear. Just sit still. It arises and passes. It doesn't stay the same. It kind of moves. Everything moves. You know, in fact, it's exhausting to stay completely terrified. It's like trying to stay completely angry. Nothing stays constant. It's literally everything burns out. And it's easier to see with anger. It takes work to stay angry. You actually have, it takes work to stay terrified too. The terror will go. But it actually can be harder because it's so wound up with me that it's hard to see it, just to see how it just arises and passes. And liberation comes from seeing that everything arises and passes. And the real self is not being touched. You know, I'm not really being hurt when my knees hurt, when my head hurts, when the words hurt. Nothing really hurts. You know, to be disturbed by nothing, to be completely free. And to do that, you have to use whatever disturbs. Where's the bound feeling coming from? And you can say, well, this world, you know, all I see is a world of Kinrei. You know, I'm everywhere. You know, I permeate everything. How do I let go of this overwhelming presence? Hopefully all of you don't have a different overwhelming presence. My consciousness has a lot of me in it. And you just relax it and let go of the you. And just see it arise and pass. And when you see you're kind of identifying with it, holding on to it, making a problem out of it, you know, just be still. That which sees the terror is not terrified. That which sees the pain is not the pain. That which sees, you know, isn't being bound. Just like that which is seeing the mind wandering isn't the wandering. And that points us to liberation. You know, no doer is there who does the deed, nor is there one who feels the fruit. No self. You know, once we stop clinging, it's just pain. It's not even my pain. It's just pain. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It's just terror. Yeah.
What about the pride and inadequacy opposites? How do they tie into this? And coming from a culture of competitiveness, having a very strong karmic history of comparing oneself to others all the time on every possible level.
And obviously that causes a lot of, to kind of let, again, to take the Dharma, you know, that's just another example of just getting caught up in and solidifying a self that's being compared to others. And it takes a lot of work, again, to see those habits, you know, because all it is a habit of looking, how am I, you know, relating, looking and doing this comparison. you know, and then feeling bad some of the time and getting caught up when you feel good. Wow, I'm ahead. And then for most of us, feeling bad a lot more of the time because, you know, we don't, if you're on, you're in a comparative mind, you're always going to be, you know, it's why people can be amazingly successful and feel like they're failures because, you know, they don't get whatever the notch is. It's like I was reading about one author who was getting depressed because it didn't look like he was ever going to win the Nobel Prize. It's like, wow, that's...
Well, it's attachment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's attachment. Yeah, it is attachment, and it's a strong attachment to the self. And again, you have to retrain yourself from seeing everything in terms of you. If you want to do that, you will suffer. That's why to take the heart right view, you know, to kind of see, try not to take anything personally. You know, realize, you know, as they say with the opposites, be beyond both praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and disgrace, success and failure. You know, can you not hold on to the opposites? And if you want to feel hold, if you have to see that pattern to hold on to doing well or who you are and all the rest, just trust the Dharma. All that matters is you have the heart of a Buddha. Isn't that enough? If it's not enough, what are you looking for? What do you want? And realize that all those things are going to get in the way. You know, it's just like sitting still. Just try to be there. And just realize it's a pattern. And if you have strong karmic tendencies, you better. Those are training is to work at letting go of those tendencies. You know, it's just habit. You know, there's nothing solid. It's like saying a habit. I like having this and not having that. It's just, you know, just normal habit energy. And it's a strong one. And a lot of, like, psychologies are telling us ways to not be inadequate. While from Buddhism, you're having trust that there's nothing from the first. So what is there to be inadequate about? You know, so you're trying to let go of the opposites and just be willing to accept that it's that I can bow to this what's unfolding in my life right now. I can bow to the self. It doesn't have to matter what it's there. It's not like, wow, the bowing requires us, you know, Buddha bows to Buddha, and that includes you, the Buddha, you. Can you bow to yourself? You know, can you recognize Buddha? And when you don't, okay, what are you asking for? And whatever it is, it's going to cause suffering. You know, because that's... And it's hard. You know, all these things, these are all the habits we've made of creating delusion, which is a delusion of, like, this comparison mind, which actually can never work, because truthfully, if you compare yourself, not only that, it's always a deluded comparison, since I always see everybody doing... You know, it's amazing how much when people can seem to be doing well where they're not. You know, when you really cut the surface, it's easy to project. You know, it's like, you know, I remember somebody, I was talking to one of the monks who was a young monk with, and she always said, but you always act so easy, and I kind of go, no, I didn't. You know, but of course she thought it seemed like I did things easier than she did, so it looked like, I'm thinking, God, some of those things killed me to do, but, you know, you have this mind where you don't even see, you know, and you just project on, and just have compassion. And a lot of training is realizing everybody has greed, hate, and delusion. You know, and it's, in a way, there's no fundamental difference in whatever it's going on in all the beings. Training is dealing with it, so everyone is dealing with it if they're doing training, if they want to deepen their spiritual life. The reason it has to be deeper is they still have desires that are pointing them the wrong way. They still get upset when they don't have their desires. And they still have delusion. You have to kind of just see it's all around you and just say, wow, I want that delusion rather than my delusion. I could only have, you know, this kind of diluted.
For me, with the cultural encouragement for competition, it seems sometimes overwhelming to overcome my own tendency to do that, to jump on that bandwagon, because you're in an office environment and you're surrounded by people scrambling to get the promotion and the raise, and trying to deliberately make other people look bad. And
well, that's one of the reasons why why training with others who are looking at it the same way, because we are impacted by others around us. Mm-hmm. People around us keep telling us something, it has an impact. And just like, you know, just like hopefully, you know, hearing somebody do a Dharma talk like me and training with others who are hopefully not doing that as much and being less. I mean, it's one of the first things I noticed when I went to the Abbey was a lot of those elements of daily life just weren't, was so much less strong. It was still there, but they were so much less than that you almost could ignore certain aspects of it because, you know, you just don't get in. Training with others is a help because it reinforces it. It's real and that it works and all the rest. Because a lot of this is making all this stuff real. I can talk all I want about it, but you have to, in a way, again, when you're immersed in the opposites of, you know, like as you're mentioning, you know, pride and inadequacy. You know, it takes faith to realize, you know, you can let go of both. And that takes a lot of work. It's a very strong habit. You know, we've invested a lot in trying to solve it rather than working at letting it go.
You know, a monk once said to me when I was wrestling with this comparative mind, said, realize that this is very ancient and it's part of our history, the makeup of our mind that goes back to survival, you know, that we're comparing ourselves to others, you know, from caveman days, you know, to, you know, in ancient history, because you're judging other people for your own survival. You know, you're making assumptions about them, and that a lot of these things carry over. To today.
There's good reasons why we have it all. I mean, there are, you know, humans are a pack animal. Getting along with others is essential for our life. So all our sensitivity to others, our comparison with others, are all on one level functional things. It's just the point of Buddhism is that you don't have to be bound by them, and the fact that they're all quite understandable, you know, it's true. But, you know, on the other hand, we can, you know, there's a way we can be free of, you know, we don't have to be greedy, selfish, very human beings. You know, we can be, you know, we can find liberation, you know, and it works, and, you know, people do it, and the more you do it, you know, just letting go of some stuff, weakening the habit energy of all these things, instead of saying, how do I stop having pride and inadequacy? Training is lessening the pride and inadequacy. I mean, I still have pride and inadequacy, so it's not like, I don't know anybody who doesn't, you know, it's not like any of the great monks I know to have no pride and no inadequacy. It's just, they can be a lot less and make much less of a problem. It's always important in training not to think in absolutes, like, I can't believe I'm proud. Or I can't believe I'm scared or greedy or the rest. It's all kind of passion. It's normal stuff. What do I do with it is the training. This is a teaching for me. I still have this stuff. Okay. It's an old friend. You know, it's like, wow, this fear. Anyway, why don't I let people not have to listen to me? Anyway, I hope a lot of you can make it.